The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Monday. Trying to get things updated on the site. There's a little bit of a glitch here. Let me see. Okay, yeah, they're up. No, they're up. Maybe it's my browser. We're talking about guests tonight. Still, I'm still seeing on my browser Friday night's guests. Hold on. Let me write this real quick. Okay, I just want to make sure you've all got the same updated page. I don't know why this didn't update earlier. All right, first up tonight, we had hoped to have Dana Durnford, and we're still trying to get him. I talked to Dana this afternoon. He, of course, the man who has put so much of his life into trying to establish the scientific reality of the extinction-level event that we know commonly as Fukushima. And we know the whole story. Coming up on 8 years next March. Just amazing. He'll get, hopefully, connected. Where he was out somewhere in the backcountry, and he said, I'll be up higher where my phone will be accessible, and you should have no trouble calling me. Well, we're having trouble connecting. But maybe we'll get Dana this. If you're listening, Dana, we can't get you wherever you are. He might be listening. I don't know. All right. Gary Holland is also here tonight because Gary has pulled off a remarkable piece of information gathering, and we'll talk about that as well. Gary sent me a story today that appeared in the, let's see where I've got it here, most, hold on, not there. Anyway, let's say hello to Gary while I'm looking for this. Hi, Gary, welcome back.
Good evening, Jeff. How's it going this evening?
It's crazy. Now, Gary sent me a story today from Live It Online, which quoted a story from the Washington Post from today titled Hyper-Alarming Study. Not just alarming. Hyper-alarming study shows massive insect loss. Now, what have we been telling you for a long, long time? That the bugs and then the birds that feed on them are dying. This is an obvious issue with an extinction-level event. It is now, according to this story, spreading internationally. Well, it was already international, but spreading from these shores in Canada, North America, to other countries and other nations, and in this case, we're going to talk about Puerto Rico. This is And if you go to the Fukushima box on the right-hand side at Rents and read down, in fact, the top link on each Fukushima entry in the featured stories is the Bugs and Birds Archive. And you can read email that I've received from people literally from England, Europe, the Northern Hemisphere on this side of the globe, North America, that are saying the same thing. Once in a while, I will get an email from somebody who says, there's nothing wrong here. We have just as many flies, mosquitoes, whatever, as usual. But that's extremely rare. I might get 1 out of 100 like that. Most of them are saying the same sort of thing. Just go to Fukushima on the right-hand side when you get a chance. And if you'd like to send in a report from your area, wherever it is, please do. We're tracking it. No one else is doing this. We are tracking it. We're trying to put this information together. So if any scientists are interested, or the government, which we know isn't, just might have a passing fancy to this material, they've got it right there. So, okay. Now, the story that appeared in the Washington Post today, hyper-alarming study shows massive insect loss. I'm going to read this. And then we're going to go to Gary and hear about his astonishing discovery. He lives in Las Vegas and drives to Los Angeles routinely. And we're going to hear a lot. If you go to guests, look under Gary's name, you'll see the link to the material we will talk about. All right. Here's the story from the Post. Insects around the world are in a crisis, according to a small but growing number of long-term studies showing dramatic declines in invertebrate populations. A new report suggests that the problem is more widespread than scientists realize. Huge numbers of bugs have been lost in a pristine national forest in Puerto Rico. This found by the new study. And the forest's insect-eating animals have all gone missing too. That's two links missing. In 2014, an international team of biologists estimated that in the past 35 years, the abundance of invertebrates, bugs, such as beetles and bees, decreased by 45%. In places where long-term insect data are available, mainly in Europe, insect numbers are plummeting. A study last year showed a 76% decrease in flying insects in the past few decades in German nature preserves. Now, that said, let me tell you, we certainly realize that herbicides, pesticides, and all kinds of insecticides can have problems for insects. So does EMF, we believe. But the big trend, the downward trend, has been profoundly obvious since 3-3 when Fukushima blew. All right, now let me go on just a little bit more with this, and we're going to talk to Gary. This latest report published Monday in the Proceedings, this is a formal document, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, shows that the problem extends to the Americas. Well, we've been telling people that for 6 or 7 years. The study's authors implicate climate change, ding, ding, alarm, in the loss of tropical bugs and insects. So I'm going to tell you that it started off well, but it veered very quickly out of control into woo-woo land, and nobody, nowhere, is talking about radiation. Radioactivity, radiation. Hundreds of different radionuclides coming over here around the clock for 7.5 years have had horrific impacts on insects, on birds, and we suspect on all living creatures, including us. Gary, tell us what got you interested in this, and what you did, and what we can see by going to your name and guests and pulling that link up.
Well, for the past few years, I've noticed this has been going on for since 2015, especially. I noticed an uptick in the amount of insects that were disappearing. I've discussed it with my wife before. We've noticed that in the past, at least good, this is definitely starting more in 2015, but we actually started noticing it actually even in 2014. The amount of bugs that were, especially in the summertime around lights, street lights at night, the, them them coverings that you have over at gas stations, they're like a canopy.
Sure,
covers. And the lights would be, going on to the gas pumps you'd be flooded with bugs. You couldn't even get out of your car sometimes to pump gas because the bugs would be so bad. But I've noticed since 2014, 2015, and as every year has been, going up until the present day, the amount of bugs, the population of bug has just been, and I'm talking about all forms of insects, by the way, like all different species of insects, we've noticed that they've just been disappearing, and they just, you don't see them anymore. And especially, too, was that, I, like you know before, that we travel back and forth from Las Vegas to Los Angeles a lot down on the 15 freeway.
Sure.
And in the 15 freeway, people, if not familiar with the area, goes through the middle of the Mojave Desert. For between, Nevada state line or Las Vegas to, San Bernardino Mountains, which would be the Cajon Pass. Well, that's all the Mojave Desert. And you'd have so many bugs sometimes. When you drive your car in the summer especially, you'd have so many bugs on there. Your windshield would be almost covered with bug splatter. Your front grill, your headlights would have to, you'd have to stop it. Sometimes you literally have to stop halfway through the trip, which would be Barstow, and wash your windows. It'd be so bad.
Uh-huh. I remember...
Up to 15 years ago.
Yeah, I remember going up I-5 once. 15, 20 years ago. And I stopped for gas somewhere north of Sacramento on Interstate 5 in the evening, close to Redding. And I couldn't believe how many bugs there were at the gas station. They were just swarming under the gas station lights like you described and buzzing. It was ridiculous. And you had to clean your windshield 2-3 times, no question. Every couple hundred miles, you'd have splats all over it. Nothing anymore. I get this from people all the time. Go ahead.
And so I said to myself, I said, I'm going to do an experiment this summer. I'm not going to wash the van that I have. I'm not going to wash it for 3 months. I'm just going to leave it as is for this whole summer. And I'm going to see what it looks like at the end of the summer.
Right.
And remember, because me and you had talked off air about this, I kept telling you, hey, I'm going to send you pictures soon. I said, it's kind of like an experiment. It was my own experiment, basically. And I wanted to see if I was right or I was wrong, or I might have been missing something. But if you could, at the end of the summer, my jaw dropped. When I took them pictures that day, and I had sent them to you, I had remember emailing you and saying you're not going to believe these pictures, and this is 3 months of travel,
right?
And I'm talking, this is 7 round trips from Las Vegas to Los Angeles and back to Southern California.
Seven trips,
like round trips where these aren't where you drive and you just park the car, the van. You drive around Southern California too, take care of various business things I do down there, and this is also driving around the Las Vegas area too. So after all that time,
you can go to guests and let's get people to go to guests, look for Gary Holland and click right next to his name and you'll pull up the link, or actually click on his name and you'll pull it up. All right.
And these pictures are just depressing. I mean, the amount of bugs and insect residue and splat on that van, you couldn't even be able to see the color of my van, let alone see the headlights. There's not one bug splatter. If you could look in all them pictures, any picture that I take in that day, there should have been massive amount of bugs. Matter of fact, the bugs should have been built up and, like, caked on there. That's what it would have been 15, 20 years ago.
That's right.
And there's nothing. Absolutely nothing.
You probably would have been pulled over and given a ticket.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't. First of all, you wouldn't have been able to use your headlights. There would be so much bug splatter and parts.
Protein.
Your headlights would literally not be functioning.
Right.
Yeah. And your air conditioning wouldn't be working. Your radiator wouldn't be working, because all them bugs would be stuck in your radiator. Because, it used to be years ago, if you pull a radiator out, and you would have so much bug residue in it, you have to blast it out with a hose and rinse it off and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's nothing. Zero. I mean, there's literally nothing. You can maybe like six or seven. You can count the amount of fingers on your hands in them pictures, how many bug splatter marks there is on there.
Hey, I'm online there, Jeff.
Oh, Dana, how are you? Hold on 1 second, Gary.
No, go ahead. No, I'm listening.
Oh, all right, good. Yeah, Dana is with us. Say hello to Gary.
Hi, Gary. No, I just didn't mean to cut you off, Gary. I just wanted to pipe up and let you know.
Oh, very good. All right. Gary, say hi to Dana. He's there.
Hey, good evening, Dana. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Yeah, your words resonate for sure.
All right.
Yeah, that's terrifying news.
Yeah. Okay, Gary, go ahead. And all you have to do, again, is go to Guests. You'll see Dana Durnford and Gary Holland. Click on Gary's name, and it'll pull up the story that he put together with ample photographs of the van. Now, seven trips between Las Vegas and Los Angeles over 3 months, and there's nothing there. This is staggering. This ought to be front page news. I mean, all right, there's nothing there. What, four or five, maybe 10 at the most, scattered all over the front of your car? That's it.
It's just about it. And it's just, them pictures should, especially on the West Coast, people who live out on the West Coast should frighten them to death. Literally frighten them. If the slow kill radiation don't kill them.
Absolutely.
Kill them, but just the pictures, the frighten, because it's just frightening. Because that isn't the only thing, Jeff. Like I've told you before, off air and on air, the amount of the pigeon population, even here in Las Vegas and in Southern California, is literally decimated. The pigeons in Southern California was like, Southern California and pigeons are synonymous with each other. I mean, it was just, it's just...
Every freeway overpass you drive under, they always are just massive roosts for pigeons. There's not a pigeon to be seen up where I am under the freeway overpasses anymore either. Gone.
And I went all the way to Alaska. Sorry,
go ahead.
I went all the way to Alaska this summer on the boat, and we counted 3,000 birds total from one end of the coast to the other. There should be several million during the time of the year.
3,000 total.
3,000 total. Most of them were in two places. Most of them were seagulls in two separate places. One had 1,000 behind an island. And in a little fjord, I found around 1,200 in Principal Channel.
Right.
But the rest of them were individual birds. And then crossing one straight, Hackett Strait was 80 miles across. We counted 12 birds. And so daily, you're lucky if you can find 12 birds. And there was maybe five species for the whole coastline. So it's really like 30,000 species of insects on top of that on this coast. And then there should be...
30, wait a second, Dana, hold on. 30,000 different species of insects along the B.C. coast. That's what should be there.
We have registered for our coastline as residential populations, and then there was 400 plus species of birds as residential populations. You would have seen exact similar to what Gary's talking about. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, Gary.
No, that's fascinating. Let me say one thing. Dana Durnford has really walked his talk. He's made three trips, right, Dana, now?
Yeah, three major trips.
Three major trips up and down the British Columbia coast. Certainly at least one of them all the way to Alaska. Anchoring, going into small communities, small towns, anchoring at islands. And what Dana has found should be the shock and embarrassment to the American scientific community, not to mention the government, the Environmental Protection Agency, and everybody else. And this is not just in British Columbia. It extends all the way down the California coast. We have reports from all over the place the same thing. Now, Dana is the first person to have brought up on this program the fact that the bugs had begun to vanish. And then we had the birds, and he pointed that out. They have something up there that some people call, and we do, we down here call it this too, thanks to Dana, the quiet forest syndrome. In other words, you go into a forest and you used to hear what? Birds everywhere. Bugs, insects, mosquitoes. There's nothing there.
Chase you away.
There's no noise.
Chase you away from the forest.
That's right. They chase you away, practically. There's no noise. Nothing. Now, here in southern Oregon, in the middle of summer, I could stick my head outside at night. Not one cricket did I hear. It used to be a symphony of crickets, so loud it would almost keep you awake. They're gone, and they're not coming back. Do you all understand that? They're gone. And your government is lying to you. It's called the lie of omission. They will not tell you the truth. We will. That's why some people don't like us. Dana, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's a great point. And what we're seeing is studies that show, you know, where all the animals, the whales, the birds are emaciated and starving to death. That's symmetrical, not just the Atlantic, Pacific now, but also the Atlantic, we're seeing that. And in other oceans, we're seeing these mass die-offs where whales will go from 12 inches of blubber down to 4 inches of blubber, and birds, hundreds of thousands at a time being found in these stomachs. And so normally they would go into the forest and eat the insects and eat just the tidal zones and stuff like this.
Right.
And that diversity, and in the tidal zones, it wasn't just the highly visible species, but there was another 6,000 plus invertebrates like baboons. And so the animals just dependent upon that for the migratory, to supplement their migratory diets of anchovies or squid or sardines or capelin or whatever the case may be. And you would get tens of millions of birds with dark in the sky. And so they're totally absent. But I have so much documentation on this now. And so you can't just have it happen to this coastline. And I've done it all the way to Alaska. And the Alaska coastline is the exact same way. You can't be any different. And it can't be any different anywhere else in that basin. And then we have, I've covered thousands of headlines for when I'm in the ocean, up the Pacific Ocean. And we went out, because I have close to 14,000 hours underwater. So I figured I could spot it. And wow, immediately, it was literally like getting on the moon. When normally we just 7,000 species, up to 7,000 species in the tidal zones, it just boggles your mind. Now there's nothing there. There's nothing whatsoever. You'll starve to death. But there was no, this time when I done the expeditions, it was, once again, like you were saying, you go into the forest, there was no spider webs, there was no crab shells on the beaches, the only shells we found on the beaches was just one large clam, cockle shells, what you call them. And then you didn't find any small cockle shells or medium cockle shells. You didn't see the mussel shells or the abalone shells or scallop shells or the oyster shells. You didn't see all the other shellfish. They were all missing, and so were the birds, of course. But that was I brought high-quality recording gear in the forest and there's no noise. That was just... And I was just so busted up. I'm still recovering from that expedition. But actually considering heading back in. Because we got 33 dead whales in Alaska in the last 3 months.
And 33?
Yeah.
These are gray whales?
These in the last 3 months, fin whales. There's four species, different species. The whale, moon whale, humpback, and that's the other one.
The gray whales are the most common. They go up and down. They used to go all the time up and down the coast. I guess they still do, but you don't hear much about them anymore.
The birds, they've been studying that for like...
All right. Hold on, Dana. I've got to take a break. We'll come right back with more. Dana Durnford and Gary Holland here. And I would ask all of you out there, go to the right-hand side at Rents. And look under the Fukushima boxes. There are two of them down. Just scroll down. You'll find them. The first story up there is the Bug and Bird Die-Off Archive. And you're all invited to send your observations wherever you are. We're heading into fall now, but there still should be a lot of bugs around. And as far as birds, I had, again, virtually none to report this summer. A few migratory flocks, no pigeons. We used to see seagulls over here from the... No more. All gone. Be right back. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Gary Holland and our special guest and friend of many years, Dana Durnford, up in Canada. And he has made three major expeditions. You have to understand this, from Vancouver all the way to the Canadian-Alaskan border and back. And we're talking video, photographs, all kinds of measurements. And it's all on his site. Click on his name. You go to his site. It's thenuclearproctologist.org. All right? Now, let me go back to Gary for just a minute here. This thing about pigeons, Gary, is particularly interesting. Pigeons don't eat insects. Let's kind of get that straight. I don't think they're big bug eaters. They tend to eat human leavings, I think, trash and so forth. But they're gone. It's all part and parcel of the same overall matrix of this tremendous crash of life on the planet, which is being ignored by everybody. What else do you notice about bird populations in Las Vegas? What do you see compared to what you used to see?
Well, especially the pigeon population has really died off. And also the smaller desert birds, like they have the small blackbirds and desert finches and stuff.
Yeah.
They've all disappeared pretty much too. And in Southern California, you don't even notice that many seagulls anymore. Remember how it used to be like in the Orange County beaches and like Huntington,
oh, sure.
Seal Beach,
yeah.
You used to see a lot of seagulls fly. Remember, and also you used to see a lot of seagulls inland too, like even like in, your more inland cities, your Lakewoods and that, that type of area, even out as far even east as into the San Gabriel Valley, you used to see a lot of seagulls flying around in
right.
parking lots, picking through the trash or whatever.
Sure.
You just don't see that anymore. You see mm-hmm. very few at the beach. The ones that you do see are very sickly. And the other thing I've noticed too is the seaweed itself looks malnutrited.
Malnourished?
The seaweed looks dead.
You mean it looks
malnourished? Just, you used to have a really colorful seaweed that was full of life. And
the brown stuff or the green stuff?
The green stuff, and you have bright colors, and now it's just dead. It's just, it looks just emaciated. It's just a disgusting.
Well, here's part of the explanation why. Seaweed acts rather like a sponge to radioactivity. The radionuclides coming across in the water and then down on the water from the rain and the jet stream and other lower level air currents that come across the Pacific from the west to the east. We're on the east side. Those radionuclides, for some reason, are sucked up by seaweed. Now, if you remember, and I know Dana does, I don't know if Gary would, but I'm going to say five or six years ago, there was a test, and I think it was, I'm going to guess, University of California, Davis, maybe it was Berkeley, but they had it was a kelp test, and it was like kelp 2014 or something like that.
That's right, yeah.
Well, was that right?
Yeah, that's right, Carl Vetter from Berkeley. Go ahead, you had him up
there. That's right, yeah.
Remember that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think it was kelp 2014. But what they did was they had 16 or 18 locations all up and down the California coast that they were vowing to go and harvest samples of kelp because they knew it sucked up radiation. And then they're going to examine it and all that. Well, that's that study, to my recollection, was never published in terms of results. They kept putting it off, and they didn't really announce much. And keep in mind also that they can, when you have something like that, if there's an agenda, it's pretty easy to fudge when you're the only one. There was Carl Vetter's, whatever his name was, I can't remember. He was the only guy in charge of it. One guy. So they had all these teams that were going to go out and pick samples, send them all to him, and he was the one who was going to discover or otherwise certify how much radioactivity was in the kelp. Now, did you ever see any results on that?
He's also out there saying it was harmless and benign and innocuous too. Getting that job. But UC Berkeley is pro-nuclear, and so they've brought up a lot of apologists for the industry. I've called them on it a number of times.
Yeah.
So, it's not a Harvard University done the same thing, Yale University done the same thing, Stanford University, Oxford University, we call it all, you know, they had done the same thing where they downplayed every facet of it.
Uh-huh.
And, no, I was
If he did Gary's, publish yeah. results of that study, I don't remember seeing them.
I didn't
them.
See it.
Or if they were published, they were virtually hidden. Yeah, I didn't see it. No, I never saw it either.
No.
Kelp Watch 2014 or something.
It never came out. And the reason why, as you know, and Dana knows too, and he's got it right, they're pro-nuclear, but also their corporate masters won't let them say anything. The corporate donors run the day at any university. And these are big donors from the nuclear industry. So then Cal State Berkeley won't have a new football stadium, or there won't be a new donation to the football team, because football teams are more important to Cal Berkeley than people's lives.
Yeah.
So that's the way it works.
By the way, interestingly enough, Gary, in the beginning, for let's say the first, we'll give them a little extra here because they did good work. For the first year after the 3-3 catastrophe, calamity, I don't even have words big enough for it. UC Berkeley was publishing, and I think it was, first it started out to be monthly, then it kind of slipped into a bi-monthly, and then it slipped into oblivion. It was gone. But they were publishing reports counting the radioactivity in things like dairy milk, crops, topsoil, rainwater, tree leaves, all kinds of markers that they were looking at and reporting routinely. Well, what were they finding? Every damn report, the radioactivity went up. So they eventually, and it was within a year, stopped all reporting. And that was the best scientific data I had ever seen and may have ever seen up until Dana's work, certifying that we are in a catastrophe here. But you remember those reports, Dana, in the beginning?
I got a whole folder on Berkeley. It's like 90 headlines from Berkeley of them downplaying it.
Yeah.
But like, I was really proud of Gary's article. So proud to read that somebody spoke here was and conviction. And but what it shows me, too, is that the bacteria is gone. That's why the insects are gone symmetrically across.
Okay, talk to us more about that. Bacteria and insects. The insects feed on bacterial growth. That's what you're saying?
And they need bacteria to live, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And everything else lives in harmony with the bacteria. And bacteria is like oxygen. You can't have an ecosystem.
Uh-huh.
And so without the bacteria, everything is dependent upon bacteria. Bacteria, because like we wash our hands, we got showers and we got washers and dryers. But bacteria is what takes care of the animal kingdom. It deals with the stuff that we are that high tech for. And we used to do it naturally, right? But long story short is once you lose the bacteria, you expect to see really adverse conditions. You expect to see like droughts. It's not able to hold water. The soil's not able to hold water, stuff like this. And this is what we're seeing right across the board. These massive forest fires can also trigger, of course, to the glacier discipline in the last 7 years. And that's the direct result of Fukushima. We're seeing that across the board worldwide, you know. And so there could be no doubt about this whatsoever. But to see that 4,000 kilometers round trip, that really drives the point home to me, you know. You can't do all of that and still have the bacteria. So that meant the forest fires and stuff will be much more severe because the forest won't break down because they don't have the bacteria breaks down.
Oh, very good point.
It's
not recycling. It's sitting there as fuel, just sitting there.
Right. But normally we turn into food for all the other...
Because
there's millions of these little species that we don't even classify. They're all dependent on, everything's dependent on the bacteria. The root system is particularly dependent on the bacteria. Yeah. So
let me tell you something about that. This is very interesting. I have some ponderosa pine trees on the property. I had about 40 trees. About 4 or 5 months, 6 months ago, my trees started dying. Now, these are trees, you count the rings, 80, 90, 100, 100. One had 135 rings, all different ages. They had gone through, many of them, a century of weather variations, droughts and all. We've had droughts. Okay, we've been in a drought. We know it. But there's something else going on. And I just lost over 20 trees. These are 80, 90-foot tall trees. And they had to be taken down because ponderosas will dry out and they'll actually blow over and they're dangerous. So you got to take them down once they're dead. These are dead like straw. Dead. They're dead.
It's the bacteria, guys.
Okay. Yeah. We pushed three of them over, three or four. We topped them, left about a 35, 40-foot trunk, pushed it over so the root ball would pop out. And we examined it. And there was something wrong. It smelled wrong. There was a purple coloring over many of the roots. It looked like some kind of a fungus. Now, nature is out of balance, and it may be what Dana's talking about. It may have to do with bacteria, which could normally
eat.
Yes, yes.
Now, I got studies about that, how the root system uptakes the radiation, how deep it penetrated in many studies they've already done because of Fukushima. But there was 20 million atoms per liter of rainwater just after Fukushima in North America. There was another study, iodine 131 per liter, confirmed. And then there was another study with 220 million atoms per liter of iodine 129. And then the iodine 131, that's a fission product, and it's really bad, dangerous for your thyroid glands, of course. But there's 10 times more 132 in that same liter and 30 times more iodine.
But no one talks about that. Yeah. Nobody talks
about it. And ionizing radiates your thyroid glands.
What do they talk about? Iodine 131, cesium 134, 137. That's it.
That's what they can find in the future, but they don't tell you that. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
Hundreds of more radionuclides that are probable in the mix. I mean, the wind, the air, the water. Yeah. And this is, it comes over here, it rains, it goes into the ground. It doesn't go away. It doesn't break down. It remains radioactive according to its half-life. This is physics for as long as it
takes. No.
It
assimilates. It's solutable in water. And water, of course, turns into cells and for plants and animals and everything else. And so it's very solutable. It's very able to be uptaken into the natural ecosystem.
Right.
And
it'll
pretend that it's like potassium. Or it'll pretend that it's like calcium. And it'll end up, if it's like a strontium or a plutonium, it'll end up in your bones. And then your pelvis will be mutating stem cells and everything else. And they knew all this 70 years ago. Like China and Russia, everybody done studies for all these years, and they've never cured an animal.
No, there's no cure.
So no country, billions of dead animals, they've never cured a single one.
Now, this bacterial die-off is something that I haven't spent much time, Dana, on this program talking about. We need more data on this. I don't know how we're going to get
it. And that smell was that's part of that. You'll find that, too. And so Elsevier, Springer, and Wiley, the three biggest publishers out there, they got 20,000 journals between them alone. And
who?
The
who is this?
University
who?
Elsevier, Springer, and Wiley.
Okay.
The three biggest publishers.
Yeah.
Most of everything is behind a paywall. And so you can get the abstracts of a lot of it. And so that helps you glean something. But, I have a ferocious appetite for that stuff anyway. And so you kind of, you get into the...
We lost Dana. We'll get him back. Gary, this issue of bacteria being impacted is a huge one. This is big.
Part of the chain reaction.
Yes. So we lose 25% of our bacteria, 50% of our bacteria potential. Yep. Who knows? This is the average human being has 7 pounds, an adult, digestive bacteria in their bodies. 7 pounds. And when you take antibiotics, all of a sudden you have none. It kills it all. And you got to start over again. That's what probiotics are good for. This is...
Which, by the way, you'll probably see a major uptick in digestive tract type diseases like IBS, your irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease.
Crohn's, sure.
These type of... Which is all related. It's not autoimmune. They're saying, it's autoimmune. It has everything to do with gut bacteria. And you have all these different issues, digestively now with people. And that would be a big part of it. And again, that's part of it. It starts with the single cell organisms, and it's working its way through the chain, the food chain. That's what it's doing. It's working its way up. And who's at the top of the food chain? Well, we are. See, and people just don't want to get it. They don't want to hear it. and they just don't care.
The higher up the chain you go, just remember the more concentrated the radiation is going to be, because the smaller fish eat the bigger fish, eat the blah, 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 and they retain it. And so the higher the food chain, the more dangerous the food. And that's the truth. Don't eat anything coming from the Pacific Ocean. We know the salmon industry has largely collapsed. We've seen countless pictures of fish with tumors, open lesions. It's just a catastrophe. And I do get email from some. Sometimes people are a little bit salty. Once in a while I get an email. There's nothing wrong here. I don't know who you're talking to. Well, if you just go to the top of the Fukushima box on the right side, scroll down and read those. And they're just a few of the many that we get. I don't put them all up. I try to, but I will from now on. If anybody wants to send anything, we'll make every effort to put every one up there. I'd say we've got about 75-80% of them up there, but they are not at all encouraging. And the story that Gary sent me today, that one of the most important national forests in Puerto Rico is now devoid, essentially devoid of bugs and birds that eat them. They're gone.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary.
And also, when it comes to, you understand, I bet you the amount of, you counted the amount of letters over the past few years where they said, well, there's nothing wrong in my area, them have probably dramatically decreased.
They have.
And the amount of people saying things are getting bad has dramatically increased.
That's exactly right.
So,
yeah.
And so look, this isn't anything, a big mystery. People just need to open their eyes, look under their nose to see what's going on. This is something where the common everyday person could observe this. This is an observational example of a slow ELE. You look around you. That's all you got to do, and see what's going on, and start questioning, why is nothing being done? Well, we know why nothing's being done. It has to do with greed and money. That's what I have everything. Like even that study they did, they tried to link it to climate change. Everything's linked to climate change because climate change has basically turned into a money hustle. That's what climate change. If they push climate change, it's going to be carbon tax. It's going to be tax this, money, carbon, Agenda 21. It's going to be everything to do with the 1% making more money, making better things for themselves. Has nothing to do with helping me or you. Has nothing to do with anything. Why they do not talk about Fukushima is because it doesn't. That's something that won't make money. That's something that will cost them money. See? So it's all about money. It always is about money with these people.
And look what we have coming up in Japan, the 2020 Olympics. And they're going to, one of the venues is right there in that Fukushima prefecture. They're nuts. This is crazy. Tokyo
that
should have
Olympic
been.
Committee,
go ahead.
Yeah, that Olympic committee should have met and called off the Olympics.
Absolutely.
And moved them.
Yeah.
Because if they were caring about their athletes and the people,
and the spectators, of course, yeah,
they would say, you know, we have a major problem here. We cannot, we've had a complete disaster. Fukushima's pretty much irradiated the whole country.
Tokyo should have been evacuated by all scientific yardsticks. Tokyo should have been evacuated. But you don't evacuate a city of 35 million. What do? You listen to the liars at TEPCO and you say, don't worry, be happy. Tokyo's just fine. Nothing wrong.
Yep,
yeah, we're not getting any news anymore at all out of Japan, Gary. I used to get, Japanese would put up videos, YouTube videos, telling the truth. They'd show their little Geiger counters. They'd go out and measure these weird things on the asphalt. But no more. They don't do that anymore. We don't get anything. Nothing comes out of there.
Because as the years go by, these results are getting more and more frightening. The reality is setting in. Look, in private, you know yourself, Jeff. In reality, the reality is setting in to a lot of these people already. The people that should know this and who are studying this, who are scientists, the reality is setting in. And they're just, at this point, I guess basically, the money at the end of the day, they're like the people on the Titanic who are eating the fancy foods, drinking the wine, and not even paying attention to the ship sinking. That's what they're doing. They just don't care anymore. It's really, I truly believe this. I just don't think they care. They want the big paycheck. They want the yacht. They want the country club vacations. They want the $3,000 suits. They want all expense pay trips to here and there. And they basically prostitute themselves out, and they won't do the studies. They just, whatever their corporate masters tells them to put in any type of study, to skew it to whatever they need them to do. That's where they're at this point. That's what they're at. They say, well, hey, you know, what does it matter at this point anymore?
We used to get stories.
We're at an extinction level event.
That's right. We used to get stories out of Japan about this strange black fungus, which often would show up on asphalt, but it shows up anywhere. And it's called radiotrophic fungus. It actually has a name. Somebody finally has identified it. So we don't hear this anymore. We don't get anything out of there. Radiation-loving fungi or fungi can remove toxic waste. Now they're trying to spin that. That was several years ago. It's silly the way they back into this and refuse to confront it for what it really is. They won't. They won't. We want to thank Dana Durnford for being with us tonight. We'll have Dana on again soon, and thank Gary Holland not only for being here, but for doing that 3-month experiment with his vehicle back and forth from Las Vegas to Los Angeles. And you can see the results. Just look for Gary's name and guests and click on that. Gary, thanks very much. We always appreciate your contributions. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff. You have a good evening.
All right. And we'll be right back with hour number 2 in a minute.